hit a booze.
And he's going to score Bristol's third try. What a great play by Augustin Pichot.
And Bristol have made a bit of history winning the European Challenge Cup for the first time ever.
And Bristol have won. They won the local derby.
Hello, you're listening to Bears Beyond the Gate, a Bristol Bears podcast made by fans for fans. With 2.5 season card holders at Ashton Gate, you love the club, the game and all things Bears. I'm Pete and I'm joined by Lee and Miles at the Bristol Beer Factory tap room for a couple of cheeky beers and a bit of rugby banter. Well, boys, it's been a while. We haven't been here for a bit and obviously we are in the fallow period with no games really to talk about. But can't keep our listeners waiting. We've decided to do another pod today. And we've got something fairly special that we're going to talk about in a minute, but I think we'll just leave that hanging for a moment because obviously it's been half term. Miles, I've noticed on your various socials that you have been around the country. You've been to your little Devon residence. And then you were up in your London pad this weekend. So been a busy half term for you,
boy. Yeah, absolutely. Left in the lurch by the Duchess earlier in the week. I had to entertain. And to be fair, they are my own two children, plus my nephew.
Well, that's what you think.
Hey! You know, took them up onto Dartmoor, nearly threw them off a couple of the tours up there when they were just annoying me. But we loved it. And then you're right. And then we joined the Duchess up on the in her residence up on the top of the Shard, where she lives a couple of days a week, and had a lovely sort of tourist weekend in London. I literally got back half an hour later, gasping for some decent West Country ale, boys. Oh, my life. What with London beer prices.
And you landed in the right place.
And we landed in the right place for some fantastic beer at the Beer Factory. Oh.
Well, mate, that is great commitment. And especially getting a train back on a Sunday night from Paddington.
Oh, it was hard work.
It sounds miserable. So well done. Well done. Yeah. And how are you, Lee?
Good. Yeah, unfortunately, nothing that exciting for me in the world of self-employment. I've been working my butt off all week. I did have a nice day in Cardiff, though, yesterday, which was nice. Not quite as exotic as the Shard, and not quite as nice a view. But the Prince of Wales pub in the Wetherspoons, top floor.
What, you went all the way to Cardiff to go to a Spoons?
No, we did a couple of things. Oh, okay. We did a couple of things, but we did obviously end up at some point in a pub. Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
But good to be here. And we should say, actually, Miles has just said about, the quality beers. We should mention what we're actually drinking, shouldn't we, today? Shall I start?
Yeah, for it.
So I've got, I did have an amazing New Zealand IPA called Dune Twist, which I've actually just demolished. But that was beautiful. And you're on?
I'm on White Desert, which I think is
extra pale ale.
Extra pale ale. Really nice, really smooth. It's slipping down nicely. Miles?
I think I'm on the stalwart of Fortitude, and you cannot go wrong with that. A fine beer.
Yeah.
And Pete, what have you been doing with yourself for a week? Apart from you being a busy lad, interviewing and stuff.
Well, wow, don't jump the gun.
A little trip to Twickers, I hear, a couple of weekends ago.
So last weekend, I was very lucky. Went to see England. Well, I say I was lucky to go see England-Wales. it was nice to be in a big stadium. Got some friends who live in Wimbledon. They're associated with the rugby club, so they got a couple of tickets. Went to watch that, and then we stayed night, came back Sunday. Yeah, I mean, it was interesting. It wasn't a great game, to be honest. I don't think either team played particularly well, cancelled each other out. Great to see Yeohan Lloyd playing, though, and good to see how he's developed.
He did get a bit of criticism, but I thought he actually played... There was a lot more positives about his performance, I thought.
I'd criticise his moustache, but I thought his gameplay was
there was one where he got sacked like a quarterback on his line. Yeah. He got thrown under the bus on that one, literally, because it was Ollie Chesson or someone, wasn't it? It was like a bus on top of him. England's blitz defence was really suffocating the game for Wales, and I think he was just trying to do stuff, and he's only going to get better. The one thing I would say, though, an 80,000 capacity stadium and I didn't queue for a beer.
Yeah. Says something, doesn't it?
It is. Yeah. I mean, they've got it. Obviously, they are well averse at this. But what was really good was round by the Guinness tent or the Guinness bar,
there weren't queues. There were some queues, but basically they had people coming out with pints of Guinness, with a credit card thing, you know, contactless machine, and you could just pick them out of these, out of the people, and pay straight away. It was unbelievable.
I will say, I think that is the norm, no, Pete? Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, at Spurs Stadium, 62,000, 63,000 fans, and no queuing as well. Exactly. So, you know, it's like something's not quite right at Ashton Gate.
And I know at Ashton Gate, we have had mobile beer kind of dispensers.
I think once I've seen them in all the 2 years we've been there.
I know, and I just think when you've got those big queues at the Dolmen, if you had someone coming around the back of the queue, and they've got maybe just keep it simple, it's got a lager and a cider or whatever, it will take some people out of that queue. Anyway, that's another discussion. So yeah, good stuff. So, but boys,
what else have you been
Miles
doing?
And this is for our very good friend, Vader, as Miles has alluded to, I was also busy this week securing I wouldn't say it's our first interview, because we have had Pat Lamb on before and we've had Joe Joyce on before.
But it is our first interview as a trio.
But it's our first interview as a trio without Tony. So it had that that sort of thing about it. But actually it was with somebody who has only very recently left Bristol Bears. In fact, he retired in the summer. And of course, that boy is West Country rugby legend Dave Attwood.
Yes.
Yeah. So I did put a little teaser out, I think on Friday or Saturday, with a picture of Dave Attwood without his head and our Bears Beyond the Gate logo, and did sort of tease. And I got to say, I think one person got it, guessed it right on Facebook. So I sat down we were on Zoom, but I sat down in my kitchen and Dave was in his living room, and we had a really good chat. It's about 35 minutes long. We talked about a number of things, and what I think we'll do, boys, is if we play that interview now, and perhaps afterwards we can have a little bit of chat about some of the issues that arose. Okay, so I am really excited to be joined by West Country rugby legend Dave Attwood, who has agreed to come and have a chat to Bears Beyond the Gate in this fallow period without games. So, Dave, really appreciate you giving up your time for us. Are you well?
I'm very well. I'm very well, Pete. Thanks for inviting me on.
That's fine. It's a pleasure. We don't have very many guests, actually. So you are kind of privileged.
A select crowd of individuals that have made us. Well, I'm very happy to join the alumni.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, look, let's dive in straight away. I have my first question to you is basically what we've been up to since retiring from rugby last July.
So I, like most people who kind of leave a long-term profession, I spent a little bit of time wallowing in kind of self-pity and doubt for a bit before I pulled my socks up and got about to doing things. And my time is kind of split in two directions, really, professionally right now. One of which is I run a bar, an Aperol Spritz bar, serving cocktails. I bought an old horse box and renovated it, and I go down to the Rec at Bath games, and hopefully I'll be at Ashton Gate next season. And I'm also going to be at Gloucestershire Cricket over the summer, selling Aperol Spritz, good times and good feelings to anyone willing to participate. And also, probably the main thrust of employment for me is working as an associate consultant with Farley Performance, who's a leadership, culture, vision, purpose, organizational development group, and just kind of helping people to be more performance orientated.
Cool. So you had a law degree as well, didn't you, or a law conversion? You're not doing that then, or
it's very much in the plan, the long term agenda. So I was like you correctly said before, I'm a Bristolian, born and bred. I went to Bristol University and I did an undergraduate degree in physics and philosophy, and then I put it to good use playing rugby, and then I along the journey I decided that I was getting involved in so many citing hearings for misdemeanors and whatnot that I should probably get myself qualified to represent myself formally. So I did a law conversion, very, very correct. And I would love to go down the avenue of practicing law. I love advocacy. I love the neutrality of the law and the kind of the quest and inquest for fact versus fiction. But a career in law is very expensive in terms of your time. Like, it is a difficult endeavor for a reason. And right now I've got two little kids, 7 and 9, and they are at a stage in life where they want to hang out with their dad. I'm still important. And there will be a time in the not too distant future where they don't want to hang out with me and I'm not cool. And it's important for me to kind of be around and enjoy that. It's a privilege that I get to do that now. So I've essentially parked my ambition to push into law for now. And once the kids are a little bit older and I've got a bit more flexibility, then I will hopefully return to the law.
Well, I've got two daughters who are nearly 15, nearly 13, and I can 100% concur with what you're saying. So make the most of it before they stop talking to you, basically.
Yeah. So I know that's coming, and I know the cost required in order to embark on that career. So it's very much something I would love to do further down the line, but I've kind of parked that ambition for now.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, look, let's take you back to, I think it was February 2019 when it was announced that you were going to re-sign, I suppose it would be, for your hometown club, having spent a bit of time with them down the road. So I'm just sort of, yeah. I mean, if you can think back that far, I was just kind of wondering, what was your kind of motivations at the time, and what did you hope to achieve with the kind of burgeoning Bristol Bears thing that was going on?
I was in a strange place personally. I'd had this kind of behind the scenes fallout with the organization that is kind of Bath Rugby, and I'm very careful not to lord that on an individual, because it's never as simple as that. If anything, I've really learnt in this kind of new lease of life afterwards, where I'm kind of exploring organizations and communication performance, There's no such thing as a simple answer to anything. So I'd had this tumultuous time where I enjoyed a little bit of time down in the south of France playing with Toulon. And I came back, and professionally, playing in the south of France allowed me to see the game differently. I'd become very institutionalized. I was a very effective, long-standing, professional Premiership rugby player. And I mean that the Premiership is a very tough competition. It's more so now than it ever was before, but results are very important. Margins are very fine. Statistics rule the way. And I very much was an absolute flag bearer. And I went down to South France, and there was just a different way of doing things. And rugby was different. There was more opportunity, less pressure, more expectation, more excitement. And I came back to the Premiership, and that 2018 season, when I came back to Bath from Toulon, was possibly some of the best rugby I played in my entire career. I was Players Player of the Year, Fans Player of the Year, Forward of the Year. There was Lucas Aid Player. There was all these kind of awards and acumen. I was playing very, very well. But I'd had this big fallout with Bath, and the kind of mechanics that had already been set in motion meant that my time at Bath was done. That had been decided, maybe partially by me, maybe partially by the club, whatever it was, that was a done deal. And as kind of happens in these scenarios, I was particularly good rugby player at the time, so you don't have to put the feelers out too far for someone to have an inquiry or two. And I had a tap on the shoulder from Mark Irish, who I knew from my previous time with Bristol. He was the scrum coach over at Bristol now under Pat Lamb, and there was very much a new way of things. There'd been a big evolution with what was happening at Bristol, and I drove across to meet Pat and JT and Iroh and have a kind of a discussion about the possibility of coming across to Bristol, rejoining the club, maybe fulfilling some of the ambition, because I would, first and foremost, I was born and bred Bristolian. I grew up supporting the club. My kind of first professional contract was with the club, and I've always had a soft spot for Bristol. like even in the kind of dark years of the championship where it just was perpetual, never quite, I was always desperate for them to get promoted because I wanted to play against them. Like it was a club that really meant something to me. And now here was potentially an opportunity to come back and to do something really meaningful for them and not in an also ran kind of capacity. Like I very much felt like in those conversations early on, there was genuine belief, and rightly so, of the potential for the club. And thankfully, we kind of delivered on that, but there was a real sense of, this isn't, I'm joining Bristol for a paycheck and we're going to like try and keep them in. It's not about survival. I didn't want to be a part of survival. That was never part of any of the conversations I've ever had with people at Bristol. It was very much about, I mean, we want to win the thing. That's where we're planning on going. So that was quite exciting from a conversational point of view. And it, like I say, it scratched that itch of, it allowed me to be like a part of such a special place.
I mean, I think it was fairly obvious as fans that you weren't there just to kind of pick up a paycheck. I think it was well appreciated. And there is an argument to say we haven't quite replaced you yet anyway, but that's another conversation. You signed for Pat Lamb. He brought us up. He promoted us. We had the rebrand. I mean, you know, this podcast was kind of like a baby of the rebrand because, you know, it seemed to be a good thing to do. I mean, you know, we've all got, you know, Pat's done a lot of interviews. He's talked a lot. You know, he's a very well regarded international coach, I would say. But I mean, what's, you know, how did you enjoy your time? And how did you find being a player there?
I mean, I loved being a player there. I felt very much out of my comfort zone because I was being asked to grow in a way that I'd not been asked to grow before, and that lined up with my new narrative and experience of how the game could and should be played. And it's difficult when you feel like someone who's, I've got a great CV. I'm 25 caps for England. I 250 Premiership appearances. Like I'm a big deal. And here I was coming into this environment feeling like I was first day of school and I didn't know anything. And I was being stretched and prodded and poked and inquired of. And there was a sense of growth that I had as a player, which is part central to Pat's philosophy on rugby. Like you'll see one of the tenets is people enter the Bears program and they leave a better player, a better person, a better individual. And that's across the board. It's not just your professional, it's not just my ability to pass the ball. It's my ability to handle adversity. It's my ability to give back to the community. All of these elements are central to Pat's philosophy in rugby. And I respect him enormously as a person for holding that tenement so dearly. I think he's a really, really interesting character because he's emotionally very, very much further on than a lot of people. He can have a conversation with you compartmentalized. So we're talking about the fact that your handling is not good enough and you'll feel like a mouse on the floor, like running away, trying to hide from the boot. And 30 seconds later, you're having a conversation in a different context. How's the wife? Come over for dinner. Like the personal relationship and the professional relationship are different things. And they really need to be. And the people that get on best with Pat are the people who can understand that he's got to wear several different hats in his role as DOI. One, absolutely, he's trying to offer you a contract that is as low as possible, that still offers you value, but he's also got 60 other contracts. You need to assemble a squad to win the Premiership. He's not trying to give you a contract to make your life the best possible. He's trying to balance all of these kind of things at the same time. But at the same time, he's also trying to demand performance and expectation. And it's a very difficult job to balance those, and I think for a very, very long time he's managed that very well. And you look at the squads that have been assembled underneath him, he's been empowered obviously by Steve and the Lansdowne family, but a lot of that is his management of people.
That's really interesting to hear. I mean, do you think that sometimes he takes too much on his own and doesn't delegate as much?
I mean possibly, but there's a sense of responsibility, like the buck stops with Pat. And that was one of the things I loved about my conversations with Bristol, that at the time felt very disconnected from what I'd experienced at Bath. Like, for a long time at Bath, you weren't really sure who to speak to if you wanted to talk about a new contract, because there were so many people. Were you speaking to the head coach, the CEO, the DR, the recruitment officer, the team manager? Like, everyone seemed to have an opinion, and your agent was involved and all sorts of stuff. And at Bristol, so I signed a 2-year deal with Bristol, and I signed an extension under Pat, and I was on my bike, I was cycling, and I got a phone call from Pat, and I was like, hi Pat, what's up, mate? Right. It's like, Dave, we want to talk about next year. We want to talk about possibly doing an extension for a year. How would you feel about that? I was like, yeah, it suits me really well. He was like, what do you want? I was like, this is what I would like. I'd like this, this, this. He was like, that, great. We can do that. We can't do that. Done. Phone up. And that was it. Mm. That's how simple and honest and direct. And there was nothing kind of malicious or underhand or shady or grey. And there's never anything malicious, but there's always a lot of grey. And this was a completely new way of doing things. It was just one person, one focal point. And there's a lot to be said from that, from a playing point of view, because the grey is where the disconnections happen. And you then start factoring why you think someone has said something or done something rather than why they have, because you don't know. And you fill in the blanks yourself, and it potentially creates all this resentment, because probably they haven't said, here's £1 million and a shoulder rub every day. So you're a little bit annoyed that it's not that. Whatever it is, you're a little bit vexed. Or maybe they're saying, we don't, you're not in our plans. We're not going to give you a contract. And now you're really bent out of shape. And you're like, I hate Pat. He doesn't, he's trying to balance the books, kind of thing. So it's never as simple as you think it is. It's a very difficult job. And I think, in a lot of senses, it's great that he takes responsibility for it, but by nature of it, it's an incredibly hard thing to do. And you know what it's like if you're trying to spin plates and one of them starts really wobbling, it takes more of your concentration. And now all the other 7 plates, you haven't got any concentration on them, so now they all start wobbling. So that's the downside of not being in a system that's well integrated and delegated.
Oh, that's fascinating. That's really interesting stuff. I mean, obviously, at your time there, you did have notable success. We had playoffs. I think you were playoff semi-final against Wasps. Then there was a European Challenge Cup final, which was the only time Bristol ever won a European Cup. Then top of the table in 2020, the COVID year. And then, of course, probably to a lot of fans, led to quite a big defining moment in the kind of Bears journey, which was the kind of slightly traumatic loss to Harlequins at Ashton Gate,
slightly
28-0 up, which has been termed Bristanbul in some quarters. And there are some people that would say that kind of, since that time, Bristol has regressed back perhaps to the mean a little bit in terms of performance and the stats in terms of our league position in the last 2.5 seasons kind of suggests it. So you were playing that game, Dave. I mean, when I look back at the team that was playing, it was an unbelievable squad. It was probably one of the strongest teams that, or 23 that Bristol had put out. Yeah. And I just wondered, from your point of view, what actually happened that day?
To kind of step back a little bit, like, it was, so the first year, like you say, Wasps in semi-final, by everybody outside the room, what an overachievement for this team that had just survived kind of, by playing an incredibly exciting run of the road, just survived the premiership, to now be playoffs. Like, I mean, okay, wow. And then the following year, we win the European Challenge Cup. Now, that's the only silverware I've ever won. I've been around a very long time, playing some excellent, excellent teams, but campaign silverware, that's it for me. And that's incredibly special. And I think often people don't realize how difficult it is to achieve campaign silverware when there are 12 organizations in England, plus all of the other teams in Europe, all trying to do exactly the same thing. Everybody is trying to peak performance, best opportunities, get the best players and get the best coaches, all trying to do that at the same time. Everybody's fighting for one prize. And to actually achieve that is a big deal. Mm. And that will always be like absolutely a career highlight for me. Then throughout that season, we're playing the best rugby in the Premiership, and rightly we run away with the Premiership, win the league, as it were, and then we get to the playoffs. And it was interesting. You said it earlier, this Bristan Bull. It was not I can see where it comes from, actually, with a reference to Liverpool, but it's not a term I'd ever heard before. Obviously, the game I'm familiar. I was there. Yeah, it was a strange game because it really felt like it was the first time I really felt like our experience in those situations really counted against us. Like, so we had an amazing team. And on paper, I think most people would argue that on balance, we had a better team than Harlequins. They, as a team, have had the pedigree of being there before. A number of players in that team had been there before, and we didn't have that. And when things started to slip a little bit, I remember on the field, like, looking at the referee and thinking, well, that's a ludicrous decision. But then now my focus is the referee. Mm. That's the issue here. And slowly that kind of sense of belief that we've had all year starts to ebb away. And you could physically, just posturally, you could see them growing as little, tiny little things just went against us and then went against us and then went against us. And then it's like, well, we don't know how to make this happen now. We don't know. We can all sit down and write it out on a piece of paper. Take the ball over here and do this. But in the moment, we couldn't find a way to make that happen. And there was a real sense as it got towards the end of full time that, well, hang on a minute. This isn't the way it's supposed to be. And then we got into injury time, and I don't think it ever really felt like it was hugely one-sided, but they were definitely the ascendant team for it. And the sense of disbelief at the end of the game was absolutely palpable, because for 105 minutes of that 110-minute endeavour, or whatever it was, there was a sense of obviously we're going to win this game. It's so obvious. Everybody in the stadium knows we're going to win this game, apart from that really noisy group of Quins fans at the top who disagreed. And quite right, they were. Their experience came through, and it was such fine margins that when we were becoming desperate, we'd stop being urgent. One of Pat's kind of things is be urgent, not desperate. Like, be in control of different situations, not desperate to solve a difficult situation. And that was essentially what brought us. We came to the end of the game. You watch it now, watch the last half hour of that game and see how we're pushing the margins in a way that we didn't all season. We didn't really need to do that. We were comfortable of manufacturing and trusting. And that was kind of where it unpicked for us.
I mean, it's this thing called momentum, isn't it? And the one thing that isn't kind of, it's kind of measurable, but not. And then it's how teams can either get it back when they've lost it or whatever. But I mean, it's interesting what you say about that with the experience, because I suppose from a fan point of view, it's the same for us, because we hadn't really been there either, because, you know, we hadn't gone to, nobody had been able to go to that Challenge Cup final because it was COVID. So, and I guess, and you rightly point out, the Harlequins fans, they got their peckers up in the second half, and I don't know as fans that we did a very good job as well in this second half, because, you know, it's a kind of symbiotic relationship, isn't it?
The momentum is not just on the field. Like you say, it's in the fans as well. And there was a sense of disbelief. You could feel it growing in the stadium of like, this isn't what we signed up for. This isn't what's supposed to be happening. We all know what's supposed to be happening, and this isn't it. And you could feel that. And they're really, for a stadium with 40,000 Bristol fans and 2,000 Harlequins fans, there was one set of fans you could hear.
Yeah.
And that's the truth of it. And I mean, obviously we're central to that. We're the ones giving you a reason to kind of cheer. But it's not just limited to the players. The fans feel that as well.
No, I think that's a really good point. And, you know, so we'll all take the blame then. It's awful. Well, I mean, I've got a thing about rugby crowds, to be honest. I think we're quite reactive rather than proactive, but that's another podcast, I think.
You need to manifest wins.
Yeah, wins. Exactly. Well, look, let's jump quickly. We haven't got much more time, but just jump to the present, as it were. I mean, I don't know how much you've been kind of following Bristol this season, but, you know, we're in a kind of fallow period. What's your you know, take on Bristol's season so far?
Well, I will always follow Bristol, as much as my career is. I'm a Bath man, obviously. I've got a blazer that I've had for years as a Bath player, and it's got the Bath emblem embroidered, and I've got a Bristol pin under the lapel. And there was always it matters to me. It still always will matter to me how the club do. So, of course, I kind of I keep abreast of how things are going. And the last couple of seasons, really, there is a sense, like you alluded to earlier, of the club lost momentum with that Quinns game, and has struggled to regain that. And there have been lots of factors. Certain players moving on, certain players being injured and unavailable, and there are always kind of reasons, and the stars just haven't aligned in a way that have allowed the club to get its head above water for long enough to recruit the energy to have a proper fist of it. It feels very much like it's like just trying to suck a tiny bit of air when you can get a split second, and that just allows you to keep going a bit more and a bit more, and it's a very difficult situation. And when that happens, like I said earlier, with the plate spinning kind of situation, one thing that's really not working, and then another thing doesn't work a little bit, and then another thing doesn't work a little bit, and all these kind of factors conspire together, it's never as simple as saying, oh, well, we'll change this person or we'll change that and it will work. Because a rugby club is like a spider's web. You can't just move one strand and put another one in. It doesn't work like that. As soon as you touch it, everything else moves. All the dynamics move. You think it's as simple as, oh, well, what we need to do is replace Dave Atwood. And what we need to do is replace Samuel Dradra. And we need to replace Charles Pietau. But it's never as simple as a trading card game. It doesn't work like that, because we're not just the statistics on the thing. Our relationships with the people around us, all of that dynamic has to grow and develop and change again. And the core of that Bristol team, culminating with that Quinns game, had little additions to a really embedded central group of players that grew and evolved with Pat over a really significant period of time, with a coaching team that was very entrenched and very good at what it was doing. And in the quest for kind of evolution, there's been a lot of change. And some of the people who've come in haven't been able to do the job as effectively as hoped. They haven't. And that's, I certainly don't say that so a player hasn't come in and delivered as much as possible. Well, that's not just on the player. Like a player's ability to perform on the field is as much about the relationships that people like feed into that player and the environment that player's in as it is about that player and the environment they kind of read out. You see players going in and out of form, like that's what it is. So it's never as simple as that. There have been a lot of good signs, but those signs are really of people sticking to the plan and not panicking. And I think there has been a sense of panic at times in a lot of Bristol games this year, where even without understanding exactly what Pat's philosophy is for this particular game, as a fan, as a someone who understands the game, I know full well that that's not what they should be doing. That's not what that player should be doing. And there's a sense of belief and trust in the people around them and the system that's just not there at the minute. And that's a difficult thing. If you could develop the secret sauce to feed the players at lunchtime that made that happen, you'd be a very wealthy man.
I mean, which players, that's really interesting as well. I mean, which players do you think have stepped up though this season that you've been impressed by?
Who has stepped up this season? I am a huge fan of Jake Woolmore. I think he's been a very good player, but very underrated across the board by so many people for such a long time. I feel like he's starting to get more credit now, and I'm really pleased about that because I think he's really central. I think Max Lahiff has actually grown quite a lot for someone who has borne a lot of brunt over the years for various reasons. I think that he's kind of stood up and been counted quite a lot. I think I was thrilled that Joe Batley came back because I think he's a great person in the squad, like really, really enjoyable. Everybody likes Bats, but also his delivery on the field has been pretty exemplary as well. And I think that's been something that they've missed with the absence of Chrissy and with not really replacing the kind of ball carrying bulk that was left with Semi and Nathan and Charles. There's been a real sense of needing somebody to stand up. He's kind of delivered a little bit on that front, which has been great to see. And then probably, to be honest, a little bit of the consistency. I don't think Max has obviously had enough time in the shirt, and we obviously know from his time with Bristol before how good he is and how commanding at fullback, how versatile he kind of makes us. But without ascendancy up front, which Bristol haven't really had all season, he hasn't had enough time in the shirt or the armchair ride to allow him to do the amazing stuff that we know he's able to. So there are a lot of good ingredients there that kind of need a little bit more, a pinch of this or a dash of that to really bring the flavour out. And I think you'd be surprised actually how close this Bristol team is to having some really impressive results.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, when you look at the table, I mean, we're still eighth, but we are only 6 points or so off. And
how horrendous the Premiership is, how tight it is. Yeah. We're talking about, well, it's not a great season, Bristol. Like one bonus point win and we're in fourth.
No, it's a good point.
A rough place right now. And things are going really well at Bath. But I mean, considering, if you were to read the fans forum about how great things are at Bath and how terrible things are at Bristol, in the table, you're talking like 10 points.
Yeah.
Two games. And now it's a complete flip around.
Mm.
So yeah, I think the margins are very, very small.
I think you're giving us good hope for the rest of the season. So I really appreciate that. Look, I think I appreciate you've got to go. So I've got I've got five quick fire questions that short answer questions. I haven't told you what they're going to be, so it's up to you if you want to answer them. So are you ready for it?
Yeah, fire away. Let's go.
Here we go. So I read somewhere that you are a Harry Potter fan. Yeah. And so when you were at Bristol, my first question, which other player was most like Ron Weasley and which player had Voldemort tendencies?
Who was most like Ron Weasley? I mean, clear Jake Woolmore.
Yeah.
Ginger, well. He's also, I believe he's pretty shrewd at chess. If you ever get him in a situation, get him involved. He's very good at wizard's chess.
Yeah.
And who's most like Voldemort?
Just a bit evil.
Who's a bit evil? I don't want to throw anyone under the bus too much. I think it would be giving him too much credit, but Andy Wren, he's more like
Neville Longbottom.
No. He's more like a Malfoy.
Oh yeah.
He's not a bad person.
No,
but he's got a bit of negativity and he likes to point the finger. But it's hard to say.
He's not a Crabbe and Goyle. He's definitely a Slytherin.
No, not big.
All right, cool. We're talking about Jake Woolmore. This is my next question. Is Jake Woolmore was promoting gin, Max Lahiff posting Instagram recipes, and of course yourself promoting Aperol Spritz. You know, is this acceptable for front five players?
Absolutely. It's where we live in the modern world. It's about like ethical diversity and inclusion. Let's incorporate everyone. Let's embrace everything apart from Max Lahiff's little dogs.
Fair enough. Yeah, and I see him walking around.
As long as you've got a real-sized dog.
Yeah. And he does have a bum bag as well, I've noticed, when he walks around North Street.
I think that's more because he's very forgetful and he needs a little satchel all the time to keep hold of his trinkets.
Okay, next one. Will Bristol ever win the English Premiership?
Yes. Yeah, 100% Bristol will. They're too much of a juggernaut of a club. Like, the setup, the stadium, the facilities. There's too much good stuff at Bristol for them not to reap long-term success. I really think that's the case. I think they need some things to change and evolve from a playing squad point of view. I think they have, and I don't necessarily mean that to mean the players, but you think like a Harry Randall 5 years ago and a Harry Randall now, like the evolution of the player is kind of night and day. So players need to grow into this team and grow connection together in a lot more meaningful way. But there's absolutely some sense of silverware coming to Bristol.
Brilliant. One of the things we do on the pod is analyse post-match interviews from time to time. And over the years, we have kind of noticed that similar sort of cliches are often used, mainly by Pat, to be fair, but, you know, sometimes by players as well. I don't know whether that's part of the training. So I'm going to give you three of our favourite clichés and you've got to decide which one you like best and maybe even admit whether you use them. So the classic, the first one is, we'll take the learnings. The second one is, we're not a million miles away. And the third one was fine margins, which you've already used once. So out of those three clichés, which one do you like best?
I take the learnings. Got to take the learnings. We don't lose. We win or we learn.
Yeah.
And I think the difficulty is cliches there for a reason. Like, they're all true.
Yeah.
And don't give you much consolation because what you want is a big problem and you can fix it. Like, what was wrong? Oh, well, Jake Woolmer had no shoes on. So next week we'll put some shoes on him and then we'll win. That's what the fans want.
Yeah.
But it's obviously, like I say, it's never that simple. Like, organizational development is complicated and complex, so you have to you have to find a way of, like, saying the same things. When we lost, why did we lose? Same, really, fundamentally, the same reason we lost last time, because all of our connections just weren't quite good enough, and we didn't deliver. But you obviously can't say that. You have to basically find a way of saying
Okay. Fair enough. So finally, the last question, and this is a question that's on everybody's lips, especially if you follow a particular Facebook group. And the question is, people wearing dry robes at rugby grounds, yes or no?
I am 100% on the yes column here. If you pay attention, hopefully very soon, you'll be able to get yourself an Aperol bra. But I just think it's such a great solution because it's not such an issue because of the wonderful facility that is Ashton Gate. But if you're in an open environment, you want to be warm and safe from the elements, and you don't want umbrellas.
Yeah,
I was a big fan of the poncho. not very warm. So I think it's an absolutely great idea.
Can't you just wear a coat, you know, rather than a kind of surfing thing?
They're just not as waterproof.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And also, like, it's more snuggly. You can get your arms in. And I think dry robe is brilliant. I think we should do more to promote. I don't understand why the Bears haven't got a whole series of dry robes in Bears colours. Like, it's the most obvious marketing thing. Every fan wants a to wear the shirt. Well, put the shirt into a dry robe.
Right. Well, we may have to push that then a little bit. So, okay.
You can come on board and we'll have a little side hustle. You and
let's
me.
Let's do it.
Selling Bears branded dry robes.
Well, I think on that note, I think we should stop and leave it right there. And who knows what will happen. So, Dave, like, really appreciate your time. It's been really interesting and loads for us to talk about and muse on. And I'm sure our millions of listeners will also be very, very interested to hear you
next week with some comments, don't worry.
Yeah, I'm but sure.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks very much for having me. It's been a joy to chat.
So there you go, boys. I mean, it was great fun. Brilliant. I mean, Dave was very easy to talk to, as you can tell. I mean, he was very honest, very insightful. I mean, we all know he's an intelligent guy. And you know, I didn't know he had double degree in physics and philosophy, which was quite interesting. And also done his law conversion, but he also done a bit of practical stuff. So yeah, really interesting. Mm. I tried to cover as many things as I could in the time we had. So, Nick, I mean, what do you think, Lee? What were your thoughts after listening to that?
First of all, I want to congratulate you, Pete, because I thought that actually it was so natural and fluid. You did a brilliant job interviewing him, because obviously you admitted to having a few nerves, which you would have beforehand, but it came across fantastic. Good. So well done, mate. I thought there was loads of stuff that came out of that. I thought it was a brilliant interview. I mean, you know, for me, like, as a we're all fathers sat around this table, aren't we? I love the fact that he's a family man. He's parked his ambition for the time being to look after his you know, to bring up his kids. I love that. But the biggest thing for me was I love the analogies that he put in there. The spider's web one, especially. And it is true. I mean, you can't take one person out of that spider web without all the other bits moving, and it is true. And the interview gave us a good insight to kind of what it takes to be like part of a team, a squad at that level, didn't it? And that came across to me massively. And you know, I thought another thing that really stood out was the fact that when Dave Atwood was kind of talking to Pat before signing, he bought into the ethos of the club. And I think us as supporters, when we went to the Q&As, and we all did the same, didn't we? We all bought into, so we can't discount the kind of charisma and the character that Pat Lam is to bring these, you know, these top class athletes to the club. And he is a big draw.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think, Miles?
I thought it was fantastic. I mean, let's sort of reel back a little bit, because interestingly, I think Pete managed to get this interview by, he bumped into Big Dave Atwood in a nightclub in Bath, didn't he? I'm not suggesting he was in the toilets, but he actually remembered you, and I think you pinged him a few messages, and what a fantastic chat, actually, you know, commit to like, yeah, you know, doing an interview with some complete amateurs from a podcast from Bristol Bears. So what a fantastic chat. I mean, I loved that. I've just listened to it on the train back from London and was interested from start to finish. I think you're right. To hear the fact that really that Pat underpins, according to Dave Atwood, everything that goes on in the club, I think some fans will be interested to hear that that's like, some say, well, that's a bit disturbing. That's too controlling in what he does. But other people might feel like, well, brilliant. He knows contracts. He knows what this player is being paid, and he knows what he wants to play this player and for how long. And I love the fact that, you know, he had a fantastic relationship with Pat Lam as a businessman, a friend and a player under him. And I think I got the impression that he had massive respect for what Pat Lam is trying to do.
I like the way that he said that Pat is very good at compartmentalising stuff. Yeah. And he said that he can talk to you in training about, you know, your passing needs to be better, or your hands aren't good enough. And then 5 minutes later, we'll be saying, are you coming round for dinner? And I mean, it was interesting. I think, you know, it's just, I think for people like us, and maybe a lot of our listeners who we don't have this insight behind the scenes, I think it is interesting to hear about how these things work, and how DORs, who, let's be honest, do have a very, very difficult job. Reminded me, actually, the plate spinning analogy is that it is a really difficult job. On one hand, you're dealing with contracts. On one hand, you're trying to get the best deals for the club within a salary cap that's then changing. And then on the other hand, you're trying to deal with performance and results, and also managing people who are human beings as well. And it's like Dave said, that when he went to Bristol, he'd left Bath because he wasn't happy. He was in a difficult place. He said he was probably questioning his career, and it really rejuvenated his career for a couple of years, and got him another contract back in Bath, ironically, didn't it?
So the thing, the other thing that stood out for me was the clarity at Bristol Bears, because I mean, I have heard a lot of stuff about Bath, maybe not so much now, but certainly when Ford was there as coach, you know, the system was quite, there was a lot of people having a lot of input into the whole structure. And obviously, I think the thing that was really important for Dave Attwood was that the clarity when he came to, you know, when he started talking to Pat, was it's just like, this is so clear. This is exactly what he wanted.
Mm.
And not come in for a paycheck, but actually come in to be part of something that we were building. And hopefully we are still building. Mm. You know, we've had a few setbacks, but, you know, that it's a fluid situation, isn't it?
Yeah.
But that clarity, I think, really stood out.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting that Dave said that first season where we got promoted, then we got to the playoffs, yeah, yeah, and lost to Wasps, and then went and won the Challenge Cup, and then went and won the league in the regular season. And obviously then, you know, we talked about the Harlequins game, but I think actually it was really important that he reminded us how good that was, how, and probably, you know, maybe we did do it too quick, because I think the interesting thing when I asked him about what happened in that semi-final was that he said that the narrative was we were definitely going to win that. You know, everyone expects us to.
Yeah, yeah.
And they had that belief. But then when things started going wrong in the second half and they lost their focus a little bit and the momentum went, he said that they didn't have that experience of being in that situation as a team. They had a team of fantastic players, probably the best team we'll see ever. For a long time, ever, you know, for a long time. But they hadn't had that experience of playing at that sort of pressure. And I thought that was really, because that's the first time really I felt that I've got an answer for what happened.
Agreed. And also I think we were in that same position in the stands, because we'd gone through that season, hadn't we? And we'd been playing some just amazing, breathtaking rugby. And I thought all season it felt like a bit of a fairy tale. And I do think we did peak a bit too early. We were a bit in front of schedule. But I think as supporters, you don't want to remember it, but you almost, no. You know, with the interview, it's almost good to get this out in the open there. But I think I remember us in the stands, and almost when Quinn scored just before half time, straight away, there was just that little bit of doubt in all of us.
Yeah.
And I think we didn't help the team on the pitch, you know, because like that train of momentum that was just, it just completely went, didn't it?
It's like Dave said that he could hear the Harlequins fans.
Yeah.
And fair play to those Quins fans.
Yeah. There weren't many, but they were loud.
But, and I did, that was why I said, I think it kind of struck me as I was talking to him that we also had a part to play in that, or not to play, as the case may be. So I thought that was really interesting. And of course, you know, since then, things... Yeah, but as I said, it felt like a bit of a defining moment, and obviously other factors have come into play, like the reduction of the salary cap, like the fact that some of our big signings were injured and didn't play, and we are kind of, I mean, my impression was that he was basically saying to me, you've got to be a bit more patient.
Yeah.
Pat has got this ability to build another team, which we may come on to later. And I felt that he would have told us honestly what he thought.
I think
the impression we got was that he's like, you know, fans, you've got to stick with it when you've got a good thing sometimes. And it is a debatable point, that, but it was quite interesting to get his perspective. And I don't think Dave had any particular agenda to follow.
No,
because he's got a new life and he's got a new direction. So I think he was being honest. I genuinely do.
But, you know, I think you're absolutely right. What Dave Attwood has said, I don't think they felt as if they had ascended, should have ascended so quickly to get silverware. And it's flipping hard to do so. However, this is what Pat has promised players and fans, isn't he? From day one, going back to that Q&A. And we achieved it. We got Challenge Cup. We finished first in the Premiership. And Dave Attwood has moved on since then. We'll go on to chat about this in future pods. But then there's a realigning of where we're going to be as a club. And this is probably the fans' ultimate question. If we are on a bit of a sort of dip at the moment, when does Pat think we're going to ascend again to some silverware, winning the Premiership? And I just don't think, we don't know as fans. And maybe this is something... The DOI, like you said, he's all commanding, he knows everything, just needs to let us know.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think almost we need a, you know, we're talking about the clarity when Dave signed. we almost need a kind of new clarity now as to you know, that's what's gone in the past, but this is the plan from now. And I would totally agree with Miles on that. If we got some, I know, and it's not set in stone. Pat Lam says it doesn't mean it's going to happen, but at least us as supporters kind of know we're not just drifting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There is a bigger plan and there is a new plan. And I do feel, when we've spoken about this the last couple of weeks, Pat Lam will get time. He won't be sacked. He will get time to rebuild a Lam 2.0. And I think it's vitally important now that we get ahead of the curve again, because there's a lot of teams doing a lot of good stuff. And, you know, I feel if we can kind of just get back to that kind of clarity again, it'd be great.
I like the fact that I asked him about the cliches at the end, like, which is your out of those three?
Loved it.
And he answered that well, because he basically said the thing about cliches are they're essentially true.
Yeah.
And he said, there is a balance you've got to strike in those post-matches. You can't, you use them because you're basically making the point that that's what happened. But you can't go too far into it because, you know, it's soon off the game and it's, you can't let away too many secrets. But
you're right, because Pat can't say, we were absolutely shit. Yeah. It was dire. You know, worst game I've seen. You're right. So as annoying as us three find these flipping cliches, I guess, where else do you go from describing games that you need to improve next time?
I mean, it is difficult because you can't reinvent new words every week to keep going over the same dismal kind of performances. But I mean, I think as well, in that Quinn's game, something that gets kind of bypassed a lot, you know, Quinn's got in to the playoffs through the back door and they had an amazing run of results. And, you know, we see it a lot in football. I mean, you know, we're football fans. You see it a lot in football. The team that gets just squeaks into that, you know, has a good run, squeaks into the playoff positions, ultimately then go on and achieve. And I think we got sucker punched by a good Quinn side who actually in that second half got all their realignments right and played us off the park, really. And I remember there was players like Facker just like trying to run with one leg, we were just done, weren't we?
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. There was the other phrase that he said that we haven't heard from Pat, actually. The one, it was a new phrase that we haven't heard. That's obviously a behind the scenes one, is be urgent and not desperate.
Yeah.
And that was quite interesting because he obviously, you know, said that, you know, we got desperate in that second half. And, that's interesting. But again, it's execution. I mean, I don't know if talking about execution of bold plans. I don't know if any of you boys watched the cricket today, but
I've not seen any today.
But that was a situation where, you know, Bazball, as it's called, which isn't really anything, it's a media name, is about taking opportunities. But the way that England threw their wickets away today was just shocking. But that was quite a good example of being desperate.
But you know what? That's perfect, right, for me to step in on this. Because I actually don't mind losing games if you're committed to, like, if that's what you set your stall out to do. If we set our stall out to, you know, to run the ball, that's what we were doing years ago when we were actually winning, you know, when we were actually achieving. I don't mind. If we set our stall out to do that and we lose, so be it.
And it's just execution. I mean, it's funny. I mean, I know we're talking about rugby, but Ben Stokes has basically come out today and said, you know, we're not going to change our strategy. Yeah. We just didn't execute today.
Yeah.
And it's a bit, I mean, that's the interesting thing about what's changed with the Bears, perhaps, is that, and Pat has kind of admitted that on TV, is that how he said that he felt obliged to go to a more pragmatic kicking game. And that hasn't, you know, perhaps that's, the, you know, that hasn't worked quite as well, or perhaps that's going to take a few more years to develop the kind of, and we just aren't executing. And if you execute well, then you know that it's a results game, isn't it? Everyone's happy.
But essentially, we've got a team that can run the ball who aren't really suited to kicking.
Exactly.
So we can't, you know. I think
it's interesting. I think it's. I think I kind of came out of that interview with Dave feeling a little bit more positive about the future, and also feeling a little bit like I know as fans we are, we haven't got any choice but to kind of speculate on things we don't really know about. But at the same time, I did say to Dave, you know, it is frustrating for us when we get those cliches because we can see that with our own eyes and we're not the analysts. We haven't got laptops to analyze it. So we do need some clarity. And I think clarity is the thing. I think you said this earlier, Lee, is exactly the thing that everybody needs so that we can see where we're going. And then you can, you know, you've got a reference point and then you can judge things on that reference point. Exactly. But I think in the last couple of seasons, we've been a bit in the dark about whether or not that is a good game or not a good game.
Yeah.
And the inconsistency is so stressful for us because, you know, we play terribly against one team and then play brilliantly against another. Yeah. It's like, where, what is the plan another, then? What is it? We don't know whether that's significant or not.
But I do believe that is because we're kind of caught at the moment in between a rock and a hard place because Pat has addressed that kind of situation of, you know, we'll kick the ball more, but it's not actually what we set out to do, is it? So I think at the moment we are the inconsistency stems from that.
Yeah,
it's just the fact that we would be more consistent if we played more consistently to our own game. But one thing I did, and it was positive at the end.
Yeah,
obviously Dave saying that he does firmly believe that Bristol will win the Premiership at some point in the future. But it's like he said, you know, talking about Max Malins. Ascendancy up front will then give us the power base to unload the backs. So we've got so much potential in the backs. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But we do need that ascendancy up front to start with.
Yeah. So actually, I mean, that's all the kind of the jokey stuff. Now let's talk about the serious things Dave said. Ron Weasley. Obviously, Jake Warmore. I mean, I set that. I chipped that one over for him to volley at top corner.
Absolutely.
Although he does rate Jake, doesn't he? I kind of feel sometimes we haven't given him enough credit for plugging away over the years.
We love Jake, don't we? I mean, we used to buy him half a Coke after the game, didn't we? In the days when we could actually see the players.
In the flesh.
But I did laugh about the... I mean, I came up with that thing about who's the Voldemort, a bit evil, and he was... I hadn't told him about these questions, so he had to think this on the top of his head. And I did love the fact that he said, it's giving Andy Arend too much credit to be Voldemort. He's not that intelligent, but he's more of a Malfoy. He's definitely a Slytherin. And that was quite funny, because Andy Arend seems to be the butt of a lot of jokes. So maybe that's the reason he left.
He's gone.
And it's like the cliches.
Yeah, like the cliches. And of course, I finished off the interview with
the most serious
point of all, which was dry robes at rugby matches, yes or no.
And this is where he disappointed himself, didn't he? Let himself down.
I'm surprised you nearly, you know, didn't delete the interview. I cut him off there.
Wow, I almost shut him down.
I hope so too.
He was like, did you not hear? Because I think I said, when he said, well, yeah, they're good, I said, but can't you just wear a coat to rugby? And he was like, yeah, but you could get all snuggly. I mean, what sort of answer was that? What is Dave on? But then he did say that actually he couldn't believe that Bristol Bears weren't selling branded dry robes.
Which is a good point.
Because he's a bright, you know, he had his marketing head on.
Yeah.
And he kind of suggested that there might be some Aperro Bar branded ones coming out. And he even invited me in for a side hustle. And I was thinking, actually, we could have dry robes, Bears logo on one breast, Bears Beyond the Gate logo on the other, Aperro on the back.
On the other.
So is that easy for you to sell yourself?
I've just sold everything. My whole principles are
Well, actually, well, sold his soul.
When Dave suggested...
For
money. Dave saying, me and you on a side hustle, I'm thinking principles out the window. I was a bit...
He's let his true self slip,
hasn't
he? This
is going to be difficult to come back from, Pete.
I do think that the reality is the genie's out of the bottle now with dry robes. Mm. I don't think there's ever any going back. And I just now wonder whether we need to make the most of it.
Wear them in summer?
Well, I don't know. It's a debate that's got to be had. But I don't know, Dave... I was expecting Dave to be a little bit more critical, and I was a little bit flummoxed. But anyway, boys, I mean, as you say, it was a really interesting interview. I first one we've really done that we'd say is kind of an in-depth deep dive, as they say,
into and we really
real
appreciated
stuff. And 100% appreciate Dave doing it. He was so easy to deal with. I also thought for this pod, we kind of talked a little bit about it being a season so far, but actually, because it feels like I can barely remember what we've done, the best way of doing this was to throw out a few ideas to listeners and see if any they had any questions.
Good idea.
And some of them, and we did get a good number back from our regular questioners. So I thought maybe to what we could do is just read through some of the questions and see if we got any answers for them. So
we never have answers.
Well, we don't have answers, but we could muse.
We can have our opinions.
Opinions.
So I'm going to go with. I'm going to start with two that were two similar questions. One from a good friend of the pod, Ryan Keyshaw, who I did see at the Crusaders game.
Oh, did you?
So hello, Ryan. Yeah. Said hello. Had a quick beer with him and his dad and his mates, and then also Chris Gingell, who I also have some connection with. He's a mate of mine. It's his brother-in-law. So they both asked the question. Well, Ryan said, will Chris Vuey play for us again this season? And Chris said, do you reckon we'll ever see Chris Vuey in a Bristol shirt again? And what do you think of the way the club has communicated with fans about it? I'll say, what do you think, Miles?
Flipping heck. I think it's clear now that we're not going to see him for the rest of the season. We can speculate. Well, we have to speculate because the little information that the club have given us, and understandably family issue, is just too broad. Excuse is a bit harsh, isn't it? But too broad a sort of like reason why we're not seeing him, I'm afraid.
And unfortunately, it's adding to all the speculation.
And this is exactly why fans are speculating. We loved him as a player and a person, and we're missing him in the pack. That's obvious. That's why we are, it spreads rumours. Misinformation or lack of information just gets fans talking, good or bad. So I fear that it's gone on so long that we won't see Chris Vuey in a Bristol shirt again. And at some point down the line, it will come out and the club are going to have to come clean what went on with the Vuey project.
I don't think I can add much to that. No. I think there's not a lot we can say,
not
but
really.
Let's just
it's
I agree.
More chance of seeing him in the co-op on North Street than there is in a Bears shirt.
Exactly.
Okay, well, let's get on to the next one. Our good friend of the pod, Councillor Steve Smith.
Excellent.
He's done some great work on Canford Lane, with all the roadworks there. Well done.
No potholes up there.
Well done, Councillor.
Well done. Yeah, Lee, you drive around Bristol a lot more than we do, and well done, Steve. But he has said, what have the seven teams above us got that we haven't? Okay. I'd say more points.
Stating the obvious, but I just feel at the moment, I think probably clarity and a better kicking game for a lot of teams.
Consistency.
But having said that, I do feel there's hope that we're not a million miles away from, top six, top four. And in fact, as Dave Atwood rightly said, we're only a couple of bonus point wins away from being in the mix. Yeah. Now, I know it still feels like we're a million miles away at the moment because obviously our consistency isn't there.
Mm.
So, so it's not like we're winning games comfortably. But, I feel at the moment we still got games to go and we're still in there.
To paraphrase a great cricketing commentator, is that there's only three things that we don't have that all the other teams have, and that's passing, tackling, kicking. But anyway, I think that's a good
answer. You look at the table, points against. That's been, our sort of Achilles heel, isn't it?
Although, really?
That's a great show.
Having said that, there are other teams with a lot of points against. But defence, I mean, you know.
We've won six, lost six. We've got points differences plus 27, to be fair. I think that Saints game helped. Bath game didn't really help that much, did it?
Because
it
was
We've got four try bonus points and two losing bonus points from 12 games, but we're 3 points off sixth and 6 points off fourth. So, we'll see, Steve. I think Lee's got it, knocked it on the head. Clarity, cohesion, consistency. We just haven't quite got that. And the kicking game hasn't been quite as good. And maybe we haven't just bossed up front enough to unleash the backs. And when we have, we've looked we haven't been a million miles away from looking $1 million, have we?
No, exactly.
Right, next question. Here we go. We are Tom Hughes. With Sheedy going, do we assume we are shopping for another 10? If so, who would be top of your shopping list? Not sure if he's available, but love the way Santiago Carreras plays at Gloucester.
Mm.
would fit in well with the way we play. So I'm going to throw that over to you, Lee, because you've put something out a while back on our Twitter feed about, you know, tens and replacements. What do you think?
Yeah, I feel that we have to have a quality 10 to back up, but to compete against AJ. I mean, AJ's, what is he now, 31, 32-ish?
Tell me like that.
So, I mean, he's not going to be around forever, and I do feel we do need a top-quality 10 that will fight alongside him.
I should say that also we had a similar question from Charlie Andrews. You said the same thing, but do we trust McGinty, Worsley, Jimmy Williams, or even Bernard Jansi van Rensburg after his little cameo against Bath? If we need to. So do we need another signing?
I feel that these guys can step in, but personally, I feel that we need an out-and-out 10 who is going to compete and sign and go for the first-team jersey to start with.
It does feel like all the other teams in the league do have an out-and-out superstars number 10, don't they? You know, and they've, some of the teams have brought players on, like it's just an example of Finn Smith at Saints or something, who's done phenomenally well. You know, and the big signing at Leicester, Pollard, etc. And Finn Russell's a prime example. They are, I assume, one of the highest paid positions, and they've just got that little mouse at number 10. That the secondary players or the players who step up from the centre haven't quite got. You can command a game in tight moments, you know, and I think you're right.
Absolutely.
We need some backup from AJ. He had nearly a season-long injury, first game of the season, and look where we are. We relied then on Callum, didn't we?
Yeah.
Pressure was on his shoulders, and his form started to dip a bit. I think I agree. I think we need to be in the market for a sort of world-class number 10.
That's not to say that I don't think Worsley can step up. I just don't think he's ready just yet. I think that chasm almost between McGinty being where he is and Worsley coming up, I think is too big to...
And I'm not a big fan of playing people out of position. I think you know, we know Jimmy Williams is a great player and he is a good 10, but he's not playing there consistently. And we know Bernard's not a 10. I just think there are some certain positions that are so key, like Miles said, and you know, your string puller, like a tight end prop, you know, like a scrum half, like a number 10 is important. Which kind of takes us to another question, which was Marcus Watts, very good friend of the pod. He says that we now seem to have committed to Pat for next season. I think that's good. If no improvement, how far into the season do we, I assume he means next season, do we wait for a change? How badly do you think the uncertainty and this is a difficult one. We don't know whether there has been really in the rugby world uncertainty, but how has it affected recruitment for next season? Because we've announced virtually nothing so far. Although I suppose we have announced Bill Matter. And we have announced the younger Grondona. And I suppose you could argue that the older Grondona is going to be like a new signing when he comes back.
Yeah, absolutely. And also I think that hints at the type of game plan that Pat wants to implement for next season. Mm. It's definitely going to be more grunt. There's going to be more, you know,
there was some talk
nastiness.
About that. Have we definitely signed that London Irish
Lovejoy.
Prop?
Yes.
Lovejoy. That seems to be suggested.
No,
we
have.
But we've got the Quinns guy, haven't we?
Is it Quinns?
Oh, I'll have to double check that.
Yeah.
But he's...
I mean, I think you're right. It looks like we may be going... I would say a bit more grunt, just because going back to what Dave said in his interview, you know, you need forwards to unleash the backs. I think we've got some great backs. So we know that. And we just need to get just that balance up front. You know, we've got some great forwards. We've got Batley. We've got Fitzharding. Yeah. We've got Bradbury. We've got Genge and Sinclair. We've got James Dunn. We've got some quality forwards. I just feel like
we've forgotten Luatua.
We've got Luatua.
He won't be there next year.
Well, no,
possibly.
He won't. We just got to get that balance right, haven't we? And we've got Thacker, obviously, and we've got Capon, and we've got Ogre. You know, we've got some good players. But like anything, like Dave said, every single team has got the same goal.
Yeah,
and they're all driving for the same thing. They're all looking at recruitment. They're all trying to get the balance. They're all looking at game plan.
Yeah.
So I'd like to think that, like you said, I think we 2.0, salary cap back up again.
Yeah.
But I do think next season is a big season.
About
we do want to start seeing us go up the table or maybe just play consistently to a game plan that we play to consistently?
Well, I think that we're pretty certain that us as supporters can't face another year of doldrums and inconsistency and underachieving again.
No. Well, this leads me to maybe the last couple of questions that kind of link together. So we had Neil Dreyer, I think is how you say it. He said other teams are playing behind closed doors in friendlies during the Six Nations. Are we? And if so, who are against? And linked to that, I'll just bear with me, Bertrand Mospickle.
Pardon?
Obviously not his real name. Sounds like one of your mates, Miles. Bertrand Mospickle.
Well.
Yeah. That was his Twitter handle. That's all it said. He said, should Bristol have all the razzmatazz build-up, fireworks, smoke in abundance, etc., without any tangible success on the pitch? Because to me, it's just embarrassing. Actually, I don't think he is Landed Gentry, because he wouldn't have put cos. He would have, because in my opinion, it's just embarrassing. Or he would say, in my opinion, one is embarrassed. But he's also said, shouting, we're amazing, look at everything we do well, apart from the reason we exist. So I was kind of bring those two together to say that, we obviously had the Crusaders game that was planned in advance, and in many ways was kind of planned as a friendly within this time. And I do believe there's a Bedford away game.
Yeah.
There's also, but I mean, he has got a point with the razzmatazz. And, you know, you can argue we've got to do it, but as me and Miles experienced at the Crusaders game, it went a bit too far. And the hacker was facing the south stand, facing the Atio, and nobody could see it because there was too much smoke. And I feel we are responsible for that with our big moaning about firework unspectacular last year. They've overcompensated.
But I do feel we've got to think that we've got to remember that there's a clear distinction between what happens off that field. That's got nothing to do with what happens on the field. Pat is in, his concentration is what happens when we've got 15 on the field playing. So all the fireworks and all the razzmatazz, that is completely dealt with by another group of people. And we need to make that distinction.
I think so.
I think you're right. I think the fact that I think as fans, we've just got to realise that Ashton Gate Stadium, they provide a sort of facility, don't they? Put on some razzmatazz. And sometimes it can be a bit of disconnect between that and the rugby and the football. But we don't know why. And if there's bad feedback about it, it just looks bad for the rugby or looks bad for the football. And that's the marketing that fans see.
Well, hopefully the implementation now of the new committee, you know, that we obviously spoke about last week. Hopefully this is the kind of barrier between, you know, what's going on with Ashton Gate Stadium and the team. So hopefully now we've got a board in place as such to be able to kind of soften that stuff out and hopefully work out a plan of attack.
And if you don't know what we're talking about, if you look back on our little list of podcasts last week, I think it was, or the week, I released what I called a docu-pod. Which was basically an interview we had with three members of the Supporters Advisory Committee. Mm-hmm. I just put it out as just the interview. So if you're not, you know, you don't know what we're talking about, have a listen to that. And there is they've provided a Google form at the moment for people to put their ideas in. And I guess the thing about that is that we do, even though it's only four meetings a year, there is a face-to-face meeting with people higher up in the club rather than just a kind of faceless survey. So it's, you know, my opinion, you've got nothing to lose. And if you don't get involved, then, you know, that's our problem, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, look, boys, I think we've discussed some nice stuff.
Considering the ratings,
I was going to come out to my last little list of shout outs to finish. So let's start with the Cubs under 18s.
Coming out the end.
Come on, then, Lee. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, we're talking about the gap, aren't we? Yeah. Between obviously the Cubs to the first team, and well, it's not a gap really, as such as it is. It's a complete void, really.
Yeah.
And, you know, the introduction of an under 20 side, I think is a great idea. I mean, the thing is, everyone needs to be on board with it, because otherwise, if you've got no teams to play, it's pointless having a under 20 side. So,
And I should say that I should doff my cap to Stuart Bennett on Twitter, because he did ask this question, which is what you've remembered forgot.
Yeah.
So it's my fault. He actually did make this point, is that it seems like having a Cubs under 18 to the first team is a huge gap. And that's not necessarily a Bristol's problem. That's a Premiership problem. And it kind of seems weird that you can sign a load of under-18s who then don't do anything for a couple of years, because in a way they're kind of in between two worlds, aren't
they? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he said, Stuart said, obviously more of a national Prem debate, but it does seem odd. And I think we agree. And I don't know, we don't really have the answer to that, do
no,
we?
So, no. And I also feel like throwing them in for, you know, the Premiership Cup games, all it's really done is just disjoint that competition, yeah. Hasn't it?
Yeah,
so it's great to, you know, for these guys to get, you know, exposure to, you know, to the real world as such, you know, of rugby, but it's just not really good for that competition in itself. Right. And I think an under-21s league would be fantastic.
Yeah, I think, well, let's hope that, I mean, this is going to be part of the bigger bigger debate about rugby sorting itself out generally, yeah. I think, and there's a lot to be said on that.
Second league.
Okay, boys, well, look, we've got a couple of shout-outs to finish off with. So the first one is shout out to Harry Randall.
Yes.
Miles, you were the one.
Well, we found out.
I spotted Miles.
Yeah, you know, a massive social media fan that I am. I spotted him on the train on the way back. He's been up great. Well, let's just say this week he was called up to the England A squad, wasn't he? That we're going to face Portugal. And there was a bit of moaning that, again, Bristol have been overlooked by the England selectors.
Yeah.
But since then, 5 o'clock today, he's been upgraded further. There's been an injury, I understand, to Alex Mitchell, and he's training now with the England squad for the forthcoming Scotland game.
Let's
this
hope
Saturday.
It's not on a paddle board, though.
Yeah, well, I was going to say that's the inevitable injury.
It is winter. I think we might get away with that.
And I got to say, that's like a leapfrog selection, isn't it? He's like, fair play to that.
So that's a big shout out to Harry Randall. You know, we think he's brilliant anyway, as Bristol fans, but yeah, he may not get any game time. He may not even get on the bench, but.
Do you know what I like about that, though, is I like the fact that they think that he's an Alex Mitchell-type scrum half.
Yeah.
And exactly. I like that because that's the sort of scrum half England need.
Absolutely.
He's a fast-paced, lively, quick-hands sniper.
Mm.
And if that's – and that's, let's give Steve Borthwick some credit then, because if that's where he's got to move with scrum halves.
Yeah.
Has to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Second thing, we need to make a shout-out for the women's team because they've got a big game coming up on Friday at Ashton Gate against Loughborough Lightning. And I should also say that I went to the game against Exeter Chiefs a couple of weekends ago with my daughter at Shaftesbury Park to see us take the Chiefs down and play really well in the second half.
Not just the Chiefs, but they're annoying fans.
They're fans as well. I was right in the middle of it. Yeah, right in the middle. I mean, they were all right. We had a bit of banter, but they were a bit kind of vocal. So I think, they lost very narrowly to Gloucester Hartbury last week, putting on a big show. It seems to me like they're kind of getting putting together a little bit of a run. I mean, I looked at the table and thought they're going to struggle to get a home semi-final, but... As you said earlier, sometimes it's the team with momentum that can sneak through.
So and that's of course, Friday night Ashton Gate,
tickets are still available.
Yeah.
I'm going. So maybe next week, we may have a pod next week where we do a little bit more of a deep dive into that game and also look forward to a big game against Saracens that they've got the week after.
Yeah.
So come on, the women, the Bears women. We also need to have a shout out to Sarah Beaumont. And Sarah Beaumont, if you're Facebook group followers, you will know that she's the lady that does these amazing sketches and cartoons linking to some of the games, and she produces a calendar every year, and she very kindly contacted us. She wanted to give us a free calendar to say thanks for doing this. We tried to meet her at the Bath game, but it was too busy, but Miles and me actually met her at the Crusaders game, and she handed over her calendar. And we said we should want to say thanks.
Where does the calendar reside now?
I've got it at home at the moment. I don't know. We need to
find a place. Share it.
We do like four months. I think so. I haven't quite worked that out. Yeah. So definitely we'll share it.
She was great to talk to.
Yeah, really great.
A great fan of a pod.
Yeah. It was the whole family. It was her and her, and it was her son, and I think Andy, who's her husband, and then hang on a minute. I said I was going to say their names, and I've forgotten them all. Oh God! They'll have to send us a message. And then a couple of other things I wanted to mention was that there is an event happening at South Bristol Rugby Club. It's a girls' open event that's happening quite soon. And I will post something about that on the notes that go with this podcast because they asked us if we could promote it, which was great. I was going to mention the fact that we spoke to the supporters advisory committee last week, but we've already mentioned that. And then I suppose the last thing I should mention is we've been a bit quiet about things, haven't we? But people might be wondering what happened to us in the Sports Podcast Awards. Well, all I'd say is that, you know, we didn't come in the top three. But when you look at the top three, that the fact that two of the top three were supported by huge corporations, are kind of commercial pods.
It was a bit of a travesty. And all three were actually ex-professional players.
I suddenly thought, and I felt a little bit annoyed because I know a lot of people supported us and we promoted it, and people have come up and said they voted for us. And actually, I did email the people that organise it and say, look, you know, it's fine, whatever, but it would be nice to know how many votes we got, just so we can see what the support was, and they haven't replied. Yeah. So I'm going to push that one a bit. I'm a bit disappointed with it, but it was great fun doing it. And, you know, we got a bit of coverage and we got a mention on the rugby pod from Big Jim Hamilton when he said Bears Beyond the Gate, banter. So maybe Jim will be our next interviewee on Bears Beyond the Gate if we can squeeze in time for him. Boys, I mean, we were glorious losers. Basically, like the Harlequin semi-final. That I think everyone just assumed we were going to win it, and then the pressure was put on in the second half. And we just lost focus.
We peaked too early
in the awards.
I feel we need a new category, actually, like independent.
I think you're right. Yeah. I think you're right.
But actually, that's not the last thing, Pete.
Oh, isn't it?
No, because this is just hot off the press.
Oh, hang on.
This is from a good friend of ours, Mr. Matt Crute.
Uh-oh.
And, you know, you posted out a picture on our Twitter page, haven't you?
Of us drinking some beer, recording the pod.
Well,
I
think we're going to have to take offence with Mr. Crute here. Because,
why is
because
doesn't like question. A choice of beer.
We've got a question.
Uh-oh. Go on.
Question is, who's the slacker winging it with no notes, lads? Though man after my own heart, I will admit. Now, do you want to answer that, Pete? Because, obviously, me and Miles have got our notes. You know, we like the old-fashioned way of
writing a pen and quill.
Well, all I would say is I got all my notes on my iPad.
And that's the way you do it.
That's all you need to know, Crutey.
Yeah. So, I mean, some of us have moved into the 21st century and using technology that is available. So, and also most of it is all done on AI, by the way. Do you not realise that? ChatGPT, I just type it in and it all comes out.
And it just writes you a podcast.
Yeah. But in all fairness, it was good to see him back, the last home game, because he's been in hibernation himself, hasn't he?
So, winter's nearly over. We'll see him again soon.
Welcome back, Crutey, and thanks for chipping in with the banter, mate.
Well, I think on that note, boys, we need to finish. We've gone a little bit over the time we hoped, but obviously there was quite a lot to talk about, what with Dave and everything. So I think we'll leave it there. We'll do our standard thing, which is stay safe, have a good week. Or no, have a good week, stay safe, and...
Come on, Briz! Bird.